So, anyways, the issue of Erevin is popular, somewhat contested issue in Jewish life. I would like to tonight. All right, it's a thin line. Basics of the Erev that every Jew should know. So, there's really two. Is really divided into two, and then with two additions. Right, the one issue is, well, what does an Erev look like? I mean, what are you actually looking for in terms of the world? What are the restrictions and about how, what the construction of what we colloquially refer to as an Erev, what that would be? So that's number one. The second issue to deal with is there an issue with building an Erev at all? And that actually is the source of much of the controversy that surrounds community Erevin. So I'd just like to at least cover the sources as to what the reason for that is. And then there's two technical details beyond the actual construction and beyond the actual, beyond the actual wires and pipe and lechis and walls and things like that, that need to happen before an Erev can work over the course of Shabbos. We'd just like to discuss the basics of that, and that'll be the night. And that, hopefully by then the Mets will be up by many more runs. So when it comes to the laws of Shabbos, we might be familiar with this. There's four rishios. There's four categories of places that exist within the halachic framework, and that those are listed in source number one. So Tanur Rabbanan Arba Rishus LaShabbos, Rishus HaYachid, Rishus HaRabim, a private domain, we'll call that a house, Rishus HaRabim, a public domain, we'll have to define what that is, that's the part of the big controversy. A karmelis is something that is in between. There is some kind of rishus, some kind of physical reality that is neither a Rishus HaYachid nor a Rishus HaRabim. However, it only exists on a level of the Rabbanan, meaning biblically there is Rishus HaYachid and Rishus HaRabim. You're either one or the other. And then there's this concept called Karmelis, which is really a Rishus HaYachid, but a private domain, but we treat as a public domain on a level of the Rabbanan. And that's, at least when we construct our Erevin in our areas, that's what we're relying on. Most of what we see outside actually is a karmelis, even though it appears to a regular person like it's a Rishus HaRabim. So that's issue number three. And then there's something called the Makum Patur, which is like a safe zone. That's not really relevant to our shir tonight. That comes up with issues like mailboxes and little ledges and things like that. And that's attached to something else. What is the status there? That's beyond basics of Erev. It doesn't really come up, at least when we have a community Erev that's up already. So the Ezehu Rishus HaYachid. So how do you define a Rishus HaYachid? Well, it gives three examples. Charitz Shihu Amuk Asara V'Rachav Arba. That if you have a ditch that is 10 tfachim deep and 4 amos wide, or 4 amos platform, or bottom. V'chein geder shehu gova asara v'rachav arba. I'm sorry. Charis shehu amuk asara v'rachav arba. V'chein geder shehu gavoa asara. Or if you have a fence that is 10 tfachim high, v'rachav arba. Zuhi rishus hayachid gemura. That's what we call a full rishus hayachid. Right? So there's actually three things. One is a ditch at the bottom, and you're surrounded by a slant that's 10 tfachim deep. And there's a bit of a question as to how... What?
Your moat.
Your moat. Right, so it's 10 tfachim over the course of 4 amos. That is the measurement that we use. It's actually relevant for one of our sections of the Erevin here. Several sections, we use this type of thing. That's a physical reality that already exists. You could also be on the top. You could be a mound with the same dynamics. Or you could have a fence that's 10 tfachim high. Right? So most of an Erev, we use a fence. Now, we're not necessarily going to see a fence, but we're, in theory, using a geder, we're using a wall that surrounds the area. Right? So what is an example of Rishus HaRabim? So it says, a Sarati Upatya Gedola. So a highway or a big square, like a big, where Rabbi Rakefet in his Shirim on Erevin uses the example of Red Square in Moscow. Anyone ever been there? No? You've been there? So it's like really big, and you can imagine hundreds of thousands of people being there for parades and things like that. All right, so that's his example that he would use as what a Rishus HaRabim would be. And then there's some other restrictions as well. Muvos, mifulashas, zuhi, rishus harabim, gemur. There has to be things that are going straight. That's what you call rishus harabim. Okay? So now we know. Ein motzim rishus hayachid zu, rishus harabim zu. So you can't carry from a private domain to a public domain. If you have a house right next to Red Square and you walk, you carry your keys from your house into the Red Square, right? You are, that's chayif, right? That's a problem. And the opposite as well. Vimachdisim rishus harabim zu, rishus hayachid zu. You can't go from a public domain into a private domain. Vim hotzi vehichnis, but if you
that's the middle of Red Square.
That's pretty big. The three. Mm-hmm. Okay. What's he doing there?
They had 12 hours over on their way.
Okay.
No, Rabbi, there was a question Rabbi Levine raised about Route 1.
Yes. So
we can have all that one there.
We'll get to Route 1. We'll. I don't know if we'll explicitly talk about Route 1.
Deal, but just a different way of looking at it. It's thin, but it's all the way
right,
down.
Right. Yes, that might be a different category. We'll get to that. And the streets are going straight. That's what they call Rishus Aram Gemura. So, Ein Motzin Rishus Yachad, you can't go from private to public, from public to private. And if you do it, Bishogeg Yerchayev Achatas, right? You have to bring a korban. And Bemezid, you do it on purpose, Yerchayev, well, Kareis Veniskal, and you get stoned. Right, that's the real Isser Doraisa. That's what we call the Malacha of Hotzah, carrying from a public domain to a private domain. However, it's not going to come up that often, because if you have a Yam, a Bika, an Istonis, and a Carmelis. So a Yam is an ocean, a Bika is an open field, Istonis is like an area in front of stores where there's a lot of benches set up. Okay, colonnade. Okay, so something like that. And then a Carmelis. Does he translate Carmelis here?
No.
I didn't know this before. And a Carmelis, right? Ain a lo kershus haravim lo kershus yirachim. That is neither one. Ve'nosim nosim esocha, ve'nosim nosim esocha, pater. Right? You can't give and take there. And if you do, right, go from a private to a Carmelis, or backwards, from a Carmelis to a private domain, again, carrying something, you're allowed to walk from one to the other, but you're carrying something, so you are pater. What does pater mean? What?
Pater
means exempt, but in the laws of Shabbos, that is a code word. The code word is that it's an Isser Derabanan, meaning you are exempt from getting a punishment, but you're not allowed to do it nonetheless. That's for sure in the laws of Shabbos, that is the code word across all of Hilchos Shabbos. And then it's a question of sometimes in other areas of halacha whether you're extending it there or not, but certainly here that means you have violated a rabbinic law. So... Okay, so that is...
You won't get stoned for it.
So you won't get stoned, right. You won't be chayef karis, you won't have to bring a korban, right? That is the deal of a Carmelis. Now, to break the news, the way we assume if you're going to build a Erev around an area, you are almost always going to be assuming that that area is a Carmelis. So Manoah Road, Haverford Avenue... According to our Erev, City Avenue, all of those are what we call Carmelises, right? So if you are dealing with a Carmelis, you are automatically only dealing on a level of the Rabbanan, which is a very important rule, more for next week than for this week. But the stakes are at the level of the Rabbanan, not at the level of Doraisa, rabbinic and not biblical. Okay, so now I move on. So now, how do we turn something into a private domain? Well, the easiest way, as the example in the Mishnah was, one way of being a private domain is that you build a fence around it. So what's obvious is you build a fence around your property. Great, you have a private domain. Now, can you build it larger? Can you include the person's house next to you? Okay, assuming you can, how big can you go? So there's no real limitation. As long as you are surrounded by a geder, as long as you are surrounded by a fence, by a wall, you are good. Now, what's the next step? Well, fences, walls, often have gates, right? They have doors in order to get through those walls. So you could put in a few doors, and then you put in a few more doors. And what you end up happening is our Eruv, which is what we call Tsuras HaPesach, images of the door, we'll get to it soon, right, is door after door after door. So when you have what we call a lechi, right, a post on every telephone wire up an entire block, what you have done is you have built a very long wall with very large doors into that wall. And that's how we have an Erev. That's the general construction of community Erevs. Some of them will have more walls, some of them will have other natural boundaries, but that is when we talk about building an Eruv and the wires, and that's what we're talking about. We're talking about building a lot of doors around an area to make it as if the people that are inside are in a walled area.
The doors open and close.
Oh, well, doors open and close. Sometimes. Sometimes they open and close. Is that required for a door?
We're assuming these don't open and close, and that's okay. You can define a door as not opening and closing.
One second. Hold on. Not so fast. That is an issue here. For instance, in the laws of mezuzah, right? So the Rambam holds that if there is no door, physical door, even though you have a doorway, you would not have a mezuzah there. So we, in deference to that opinion of the Rambam, right, we put mezuzahs there. We pass and we do put mezuzahs there, but we would never make a bracha in that area, which sometimes leads to problems in like public dedications and things like that, because that's the obvious place to have like a big ceremony, but you can't really make a bracha on that mezuzah. Right, you have to be. It has to be done on a doorway that actually has a physical door in it. Okay, so what is a Tzuras HaPesach? So the Shulchan Aruch is the clearest explanation that I could find to just put on a sheet, right? Mahu Tzuras HaPesach. What is this Tzuras HaPesach that we would be that we're referring to? So Kana Mikan V'Kana Mikan V'Kana Al Gaveim. That you have a post here, a post there, and then a post that goes on top. Okay. Afilu, eno nogea behen ela shiyesh binehem kama amos. Even if the post on top, we'll call it a post for now, isn't touching the door, even there's a long separation between them, that's okay. Uvachi he gova hakan shemikan umikan yudfachem viyumichuvanim keneged kana elyon. As long as the posts, again, what we call lechis, even though that's not the technical term, what we call the posts are ten tfachim high, right, about this high, right, and the post and the wire on top, or the whatever is on top, is going directly above the eyes. It can be deceiving, right? You can use a what's it called? And you have a laser that shoots up. What are those things called? A laser pointer, but there's like a level razor pointer, right? And you will be surprised, even these massive telephone poles that you see outside, you will be surprised how much they really are shifting. The top could sometimes be 2, 3, 4 feet over than what is on the bottom, and to the naked eye, it looks straight. But that's why it's somewhat rare in community areas to really use this in a significant way, that have the wire up there and the post down here, because to catch it is difficult. When you do that, you'll have a wider post. We have it in a few places where we have a wider post at the bottom to make sure that you catch what's on top.
Yes.
Right.
You could use a telephone wire in principle.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hold on. There is a slight issue that we'll get to, but that's the basics of a Tzuras HaPesach. Okay. And then he says, Vim chiber kana elyon lishnei hakanim ole echad mehem min hatzad lo mahani. Now, if the wire is just going along the side, that doesn't work. Right? So if you look at a telephone wire, it just goes up, straight up a block, and it's on the side of post after post after post. So that's a problem. Right? You can't just, there's telephone wires all over the place. I'll just use them all, because telephone wires are usually on the side of the post, not on top of the post. Right, so that's why we have to do a little bit of construction usually, because they go along the side, not along the top. If you could find telephone wires or electric wires where the wire is going directly on top of the wire, that is Eruv gold. That is exciting to the Eruv maker, because that means that he has an entire area that he doesn't have to do any construction to. He could just leave it. He just leave it as is.
I'm sorry, you said if you found a hole where the wire is. You're talking about a place where the wire might be right above the lefty that you put up.
Well, no, sometimes it's right on top of the electric pole.
Itself.
If it's on top of the electric pole, so then you can just use it. You could just and skip.
But they don't make them that way.
They don't make them here. In Arizona, we had, there are good several sections that we just, you could just drive right by.
No.
You would not need a lefty because the telephone pole itself is serving as your lefty. Okay. Now, one other one. This gets into Norm's issue. V'tzarech sheyuhu hakanim shebitzdadim chazakim lekabel deles kol shehu. Now, you want it to be that the doors, the posts on the side, they have to be strong enough to be able to hold some amount of door, afilu shel kasho shel kanim. Even if it's some kind of mesh or reeds, even if it's very weak, it still needs to be strong enough to hold something up. Now, that is a significant issue. First of all, how much does it have to hold up? Does it have to hold up a door which is four amot, like just a small amount of door? Does it have to hold the entire distance to the next post? That's issue number one. If it's to the next post, most of our poles are not going to work. What do we rely on? We rely on that, yes, the post itself might not hold, our lechi itself, our plastic might not hold it up, but it's connected to something that would hold it up. The way that it's connected, the way that it's firmly planted, will hold something up. So therefore, that's what we rely on to use our plastic lechis that are attached to a post. Aval kana she'al gaban sagi b'chol shehu v'afilu gami mahani. However, the wire or the kana, the post that is on top, That doesn't have to be whole built to hold anything. That could be little nothing. V'afilu gami mahani. Even a reed or fishing wire, or we don't use fishing wire, we use some other type of rope that has been tested by Rabbi Shmuelau, right? But anything could be used on top, no matter the thickness. So our practice generally is to make it as invisible as if we're using our own wires, to make it as invisible as possible, right? So that nobody gets annoyed. The best scenario is to use wires that are already there, right? And we would just take our lechis and our plastic tubing and bring it all the way up so that we have now formed a kana mikan with the two plastic tubings with a kana al gabayim, with a wire that's going on top.
You don't have to bring it up close to the pipe.
Well, in practice we do. In theory you don't. In theory it could be 20 amos high, mm-hmm. right? But in practice it's rare to... We're not comfortable doing it. We have a few places where we do it because... We're sure, and plus it's a very wide space at the bottom. But in regular spaces, we're going to use it as little as possible because it's risky. Things shift, things fall, things could get in the way. We don't like to use it. Now there is two issues here that the Mishnah Berurah mentions. The Mishnah Berurah mentioned, actually, one issue that the Mishnah Berurah mentions that it has to be able to, that it's allowed to sway, meaning what if it gets moved from side to side? So if it's the wind that's blowing it from side to side, that's okay. Even if there might be a branch that might move it temporarily from side to side, that's also okay. However, if a branch moves it, if it has been misdirected because of some kind of thing that's in the middle of the air, right? So that is a problem. Now, how big of a problem and how much does it need to be moved? So that is the $65,000 question. That is a huge question. Aaron, nobody knows, A, if it's allowed to be moved at all and how much it is. Some rely on the idea of lovewood, the idea of three tvachim, as long as it's swaying less than three tvachim, either in either direction or combined, that's okay. Some have pointed out that, well, wait a second, lovewood is never used that way. Lovewood is only used to make a connection, not to hold something straight. Some say, no, you can't move it at all. Some say, if it's a little bit off from where the lechi... There's many different opinions on how much you'd be allowed. We try to keep it as clear as possible. That's why we shave the trees. Lemaisa, I remember I once asked kind of cornered Rav Shechter about this, and Lemaisa, come on, give me something. And he said, well, the example in the Gemara that's given is that the Gemara uses an example of making a lechi and korah with vines, that it stretches vines from one side to the other. So vines are never straight. Vines are always somewhat crooked, and they go... and they kind of swerve from one to the other. So as long as it's going the general direction, you should be okay. Okay, but...
That's pretty vague.
Right, that's pretty vague, right? So of course it's pretty vague. Otherwise it'd be an easy question to answer. We try as best as we can that to make sure that it's not moved from one way to the other. B'di'eved, when there's certain situations... Depending on what time on Erev Shabbos it comes up, it might be more makel than other times, but that's one of the expenses of air, one of the difficulties of air, and particularly in a climate like ours, is that the leaves are constantly growing and the branches are constantly swaying and the environment is changing, and you gotta keep track. There was once, We have one very long wire that goes in one spot, you know, by Carroll Park. It's probably about 100 yards, that wire, from one end to the other end. And I noticed it was a little bit caught on a branch once. So Jack Sitterer came with his big tool to cut things down. He's got one of these like 20-foot high cutting things. Mm-hmm. And we moved it, we manipulated, got it out. And it turned out that the wire was about 8 feet off from where it should have been. I mean, when we got the branch out of the way, even though it didn't look like it had moved at all, it looked like it was still straight. It just had a branch against it. When we got the branch out of the way, it had moved. It moved 7 or 8 feet over to a side. So, especially with the longer wires, yeah, that's something that one has to be careful. There's also an advantage to using electric wires, because they're much heavier. They're not going to get moved from side to side.
So,
we had to clear the branches away so that the wire goes back to being straight. Right. The Rambam at the end here he quotes V'yishmei Achronos Shemachmirim Bezev V'Lidhubo Seya Eir V'Adei Chevel Tzarech L'Machto B'Chazak K'dei Shelo Yagidu HaRevach, that you want to make it as strong as possible so that it not get moved and so that it also not turn into an arch. There are those that are Machmir that it not arch down. If you use electric wires, you're clearly not going to be Machmir on that, right? They're all arching down a little bit. The question is how far down. When I was in Phoenix, Rav Nata Greenblatt was the Rav HaMachshir for the Eruv, and he was not makbid on this at all, as long as the entire Eruv is still above 10 tefachim. Now, that is an issue. There are, a couple of years ago, there was a spot that goes along City Avenue where we have by the seminary where it's about, I don't know, 8 feet high or 10 feet high, so it's definitely above 10 tefachim, but somehow because of the ice had brought it all the way down into the snow. It was stuck in the snow. I had to clear stuff away, and the wire went flying up. But this issue, when it gets pulled all the way down, that is a significant issue. There's also an issue that the snow is high enough such that it came within 10 tefachim of one of our low wires. So that's not a problem. I mean, just if the snow is going up and not pulling the wire down, we don't count from the top of the snow. We count from the the base where you would actually be standing. So that was okay. How long can these lechis be, or how wide can they be? So the Shulchan Aruch says, in source number 4, that if you have it wider, even wider than 10 amos, you're okay. In theory, if you had a large property, all you would have to do, any size property, you would have to set up 4 corners, or even technically 3 corners, right? You have to set up 4 posts in 4 corners, as wide as you want, and you can just have an area of just using 4 posts, right? That would be okay. However, Ula HaRambam, however, ain't Sarach HaPesach Moel L'Pirtza Yoser Meyaseh. The Rambam, however, says that you can't have it wider than 10 Amos, Elim Kein Omin Merubah Al HaParetz, unless you have Omin Merubah Al HaParetz is that there's a lot of wall anyways, so then you can rely on a wider Tzuras HaPesach. So for this reason, this is one of the reasons. One of the reasons why people don't like the hold of, we'll try to be Machmer, not hold by community Eruvs, because even though we rely on the lenient opinion and sometimes have Tzuras HaPesachs that are 100 yards long, the Rambam says it can't be wider than 10 Amos, which is approximately 16 feet or so, pretty much making it impossible to build any community Eruv in. So who do you hold like a Shulchan Aruch when the Shulchan Aruch quotes the Rambam? So generally we would quote the Shulchan Aruch against the Rambam, however there are some, probably most notoriously the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, asking for Chabadniks to be Machmir for this Rambam, which is why many Chabads will not hold of an Erev. It's for this reason, not the reason for, like the rest of the world, but for this reason, because a community Erev can't be wider than that. So in Chabad camps, they'll build Erevs with very close Tzuras HaPesach. They'll make the posts very close to one another in order to fulfill this opinion.
What's the reason of the rest of the world?
Because we're not machmer for that opinion. I mean, he says it can't be.
The rest of the reason. I thought it was the reason the rest of the world didn't hold by a ruler.
The rest of the world has a different chumrah. We'll get to the other chumrah soon.
And how wide is City Line Avenue?
Oh, wider than that. Right? We have plenty of Tzuras HaPesachs that are wider than that. I think 95% of our Tzuras HaPesachs are wider than this, and I would say 95% of Tzuras HaPesachs of community areas in the world are going to be wider are wider so than 16 hours.
The streets in Flatbush are wider than that.
Probably.
Is that why?
No, but we're Flatbush is a different reason. We'll get to the Flatbush reason. This reason will either you hold like this or you not. Then don't. Then if you are going to be strict like this, you're probably not going to hold of any community areas, which. Okay, don't get me started on that. With the tape recorder running, I don't want to discuss the men issue and the men holding women. Not going there.
The 10 here is amos or
what?
Or fucking?
He says it's 10 amos. Yosir and Esser, 10 amos. Yeah. Okay, so can an eruv be made at all? I really should say, can a community eruv be made at all? So there is this Gemara. There's a Gemara that appears in two or three places that has a discussion. It's unclear how we pasuk, and as the time is flying, we'll do this outside. But it has a concept called asum rabim umavatle mechitzos, that many people can come and they can nullify a wall. What is this based on? So the Gemara has a discussion about a certain type of eruv that was put up around the wells that people used to rely on when they were going up to Yerushalayim for Olas and for Aliyah L'Regel, and it was a weak type of Eruv, not even Tzuras HaPesach, a different weak thing. It was four corners. Okay, whatever it was. And the Gemara said, well, it has a problem with that, because Asu Rabim Umevatli Mechitzos, because if many people...
Right there at the well,
and their animals could eat from it and drink from it, and yeah, they could take some water up and put it right there, and the animals would drink from it.
People are walking through it. Too many people are walking.
Right. So if too many people are walking through it, so that is going to be mevatel the mechitza. So if you do it in a reshus harabim, if you do it in a public domain, and you use these weak type of eruvs, so if there is many people coming through it, so then we don't count it as a mechitza anymore. It loses its status as being a wall. That's the case. The Gemara now. The Gemara does not discuss that in the context of Tzuras and Pesachs, but that's the extension that's made. That perhaps if all you're using are Tzuras HaPesachs, these things, so Asu Rabim, many people will come and they will be Mevatel the Mechitza. They will nullify that status as being a Mechitza.
So your Eruv is too porous.
So it will be considered too porous. Right. So how do you define it, that space as being a Rishus HaRabim? So you got to figure out what really is a Rishus HaRabim. You have to figure out what is a Rishus HaRabim on the level of Doraisa. So we were saying that we rely on this whole area being Rishus HaRabim level of Dorabanan. How do we know? I don't know. If you ask somebody, what do you consider Hereford Avenue? Is that a public domain? It looks pretty public to me, right? Why would that not be considered a public domain, right? So again, what's the, just make sure we have clear the issue. These weak type of mechitzos, not a wall, or certainly not a wall that has, or even a wall with a door that has an actual doorway. I think that's in there someplace. But if you're just using these wires and poles and corners, and things like that. So is that going to qualify as being is that going to then be disqualified by the mass of people that are coming through? So what is a Rishus HaRabim? So the Shulchan Aruch gives the following qualifications. So Ezehu Rishus HaRabim, Rechovus V'shukim HaRachavim Tesayin Amah. So if the streets are 16 amos wide, ve'ina makorim ve'in lahem choma, and they don't have any type of interrupt. Source number 6, right? They don't have any type of wall blocking it. Ve'in lahem ve'afilu yesh lahem choma, and even if they have a wall, im heimufulashim et mishar l'shar, if it goes straight from one end of the city to another end of the city, so you have a street that goes straight through. Ve'in dal sehem neulos belayla, and the doors don't close at night. So that's one of the leniencies. The Gemara has a discussion about Yerushalayim itself. That why is Yerushalayim, why are you allowed to rely on it as an Erev? Says, well, because the doors to the city close at night. So because the doors to the city close at night, that pushes it back to being a Rishus HaYachid. Right? So if it's straight and the walls are don't close at night, so have your Rishus HaRabim. Right? So those are the ideas the Shulchan Aruch presented. Shulchan Aruch presented that it's 16 amos wide, There's no interruption. If there is some type of interruption, it goes straight from one end of the city to the other end of the city. That's what we're going to call a Rishus HaRabim. So we have that in a few places, perhaps. Perhaps we have that in a few places. If you have a straight road that goes from one end of the other, so then it should be, then it would, and it's 16 amos wide, we're going to call that Rishus HaRabim.
For sure,
what?
City Avenue.
Ah, so what about City Avenue? So yeah, is City, so there's two issues with City Avenue.
You didn't mention
the variable of the amount of people that have to go on.
Not yet.
City Avenue does not run through the center of the city. Broad Street runs through.
No. Hold on a second.
It
doesn't matter if it's through the center of a city. It means does it go straight through a city? That's the question.
No.
So the City Avenue runs straight through the city. So I think there's two reasons. There's two issues with City Avenue. Number one is that it doesn't run straight. That you could just look at it and it's not going straight. It's curving around. By around the Green Hill, there's a pretty sharp turn. Or to one who is looking with Erev eyes, there's a pretty sharp turn that happens right there. It's not, if you continue in City Avenue in a straight line, you will end up hitting the seminary. Right, you're not going to be able to go straight. The second thing with regards to City Avenue is that it's straight through the entire city. City Avenue is not going straight through the entire city. Route 1 maybe is, but Route 1 isn't defined by a straight road. Route 1 is defined by where people put up a sign that says Route 1, right? So just because someone has decided to call something Route 1 that goes straight from Maine all the way to Miami... I was at the beginning of Route 1 in Maine. Not at the beginning, but I saw Route 1 in Maine. I was all excited. Oh, we could take this straight back home.
Yes.
right? Even though that's the case, it's not one road that goes straight through. It's where people have put up signs that say Route 1 that goes straight through. So for those two reasons, I am not convinced. I don't call City Avenue a city that calls Befulish Mishar Lashar. Other poskim clearly do. Okay. Right.
And
so,
yeah. Go for 20 miles.
So, in one of the books, I think in this book, in Rabbi Bechaver's book, it might have been. I think it was Rabbi Bechaver's book. He points out that smaller cities are going to have bigger problems with this than bigger cities. Bigger cities are not going to the very large highways that go straight, not caring about using eminent domain. We don't care what's in the way. We're just going to go straight through. Right? Those don't go through Philadelphia, Manhattan, right? Those are what the major highways will go around the major cities. It's when you drive through places. When we were in Arizona, there was this place Yuma that's near where the Matzahs are, right near California, right. So there is the highway that goes straight through Yuma, right? Highway 8, right, where you could fly, you could drive 75 miles an hour, right? 75 miles an hour speed limit, right? So that is a road that's mefulish lishar lishar. That's going straight through the city, right? So it could be that there are some streets like that here, but okay,
95 is not.
Only that.
But 95.
Okay, so then you get to the other what?
95 is not straight.
Right, but 95 is also 95 is not straight, and it's also well.
I think in Boston it goes directly under.
Okay,
the
city. Fine. On this, okay. So
yeah, so a small city, you're right. You have smaller
bands. These villages are going to have bigger problems because the roads are going to go straight through, as opposed to bigger cities where it won't. Okay. By the way, there's the Chazon Ish that took this and took other things to an extreme and pointed out that probably no major cities could be called the Rishus HaRabim d'Oraisa for this reason, because nothing's going to go straight through, and they all probably have walls already because the big buildings form walls around the streets. So that is the Chazon Ish had a whole different perspective as how to look at cities. We're not really going
to
go there.
Even though the doors of, like, say, Jerusalem are open and there's lots of traffic in between going in and out during the day, as long as they close them at night, that's enough to qualify.
If it has all these other qualifications, which if the Gemara was asking that question, it did, meaning it had things that went from one end to the other end, and it was wide enough. Apparently, they don't look wide enough now, but apparently they claim them to be wide enough. So yeah, so closing the gates helped.
But they don't close them.
Now they add in a couple of other things. Now the Shulchan Aruch then goes on and says v'yei shomrim, and then there are those that say shekol she'ein shishim ribo ovrim bo b'chol yom einu rishus harabim, that if there aren't 600,000 people going there, whatever that means, going there every day, in the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. It's also not going to be called the Rosh Hashanah Rabbim. Now, that's based on the Midbar, right? That's a lot of people. Yeah, yeah. 600,000 people are going there. Now, so that's pretty much going to take away any shot for anything to be Rosh Hashanah Rabbim D'oraisa, and that's what many claim. Many claim, yeah, okay, if you pass in like this Shulchan Aruch, this line in the Shulchan Aruch, so nothing is really going to be Rosh Hashanah Rabbim this side of Red Square, right? Which could fit, in theory, 600,000 people. Now, there's two major issues with that. Number one is, what does that mean, 600,000? And the second major issue is, and do we paskin like that? Now, generally, in the rules of Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch didn't write these rules, but later Poskim looked at the Shulchan Aruch and said, you know, the Shulchan Aruch uses a lot of interesting codes. Sometimes he'll say, Yesh Orim this, and Yesh Orim this. Sometimes he'll say it Alacha, and he'll say, and Yesh, and some say it like this. Or sometimes he'll say, Yesh Orim like this, Halacha like this, right? So how do you know, what's he actually saying? How does he actually Paskin? So the rule is, for something like this, when there is a Klal v'yesh, when stam v'yesh, it's called. There's a straight halacha, and then there is a yesh omrim halacha kistam. We pass them like the stam, meaning that's the Shulchan Aruch's way of telling you there is this opinion out there, but we don't really paskin that way. So according to the Shulchan Aruch, the 600,000 thing is not going to be usable. Where did it come from, 600,000? It's not mentioned at all in the Gemara. Rashi and Tosos are the ones who quote this idea of 600,000. And do other Rishonim agree with them? Questionable whether other Rishonim agree with them. Again, you see clearly the Shulchan Aruch was not comfortable with it. There were... how do we, in the Ashkenazi world, how did they paskin? Well, it changed over time. In most cities in Europe, certainly in... Eastern Europe, right? Poland, Hungary, Ukraine, places like that, they relied on this opinion and they would put up Eruvs all over. Every city would have an Eruv. Along came the Sefer Mishkanos Yaakov, who was living in Vilna in the early 1800s, and he said, well, let's do a check. Let's count up in the Ashkenazi world who agrees with this and who doesn't agree with this. And he did an accounting and said, most people disagree with the 600,000, and he said, therefore, no Irvin, all Irvin need to be, are gone. Now, he is living in Lithuania. That's what counts for the somewhat, how do you say, the divide, in Congress, when you have different parties, when you have different parties, you try to be, AIPAC tries to be nonpartisan, right? That's what causes the partisan divide. So I asked Yoni Gesserman when he was here over Yom Tov, like, what's going on in Flavish? Do people hold the Erev or do they not hold the Erev? He said, most people don't. My shul doesn't. We hold like Rav Moshe, who's Machmir, says you can't use it. But the modern group does, and the more modern group does, the Young Israel, etc. And the Hasidim all do. Right, the Hasidim do. And I remember asking and because they're Polish or Hungarian, as opposed to Lithuanian. I remember asking my grandmother, who lived in Borough Park, so what's the story? Are people holding the Eruv that was built in Borough Park? She said to me, they do. I mean, the Hasidim do. The Hasidish do. The Litvish don't. But even the Hasidim that do, they walk around with these shopping bags all the Shabbos. It's not right. They shouldn't be walking around with shopping bags on Shabbos. They should have nice bags to carry around on Shabbos. Okay, thank you, Safta. I appreciate the musser. But that is what causes that type of divide. The Hasidim stuck with the, she's called the Beis Ephraim, and the majority of Poskim of Poland and Hungary, while the more yeshivish world follows the Lithuanian tradition, which ended up being machmir on this. So the Mishnah Berurah, where does the Mishnah Berurah come from? The Mishnah Berurah was Lithuanian. So the Mishnah Berurah in several places, there in the source 6, the Mishnah Berurah there, and then the Be'er Halacha as well, and a few other places, goes to this refrain of, you know, I did the count, and I know there's Erevs all over the place, and I can't say that they're really so bad, but really, you know, a Baal Nefesh should be machmir. What's the term he uses here? Here he says, I looked through all the Rishonim, and I didn't see this idea of the 600,000. And there's look where I wrote in the Be'er Halacha, and the Be'er Halacha below, he says, in the underlined part, V'in Kain, Kasha al minaga olam shemistapkim b'tzuras ha-pesach v'shus ha-rabim shu rach av yudvav amma u'mefulish mishar l'shar. It's difficult to understand why the minaga olam, that everybody relies on a tzuras ha-pesach that goes over a 16 amma space, and then it goes straight from one end to the other end. Right, so if you have something like that, if you have a straight road that's 16 amos wide, so the Mishnah Berurah says that one should be machmir and not rely on it. Why? Because it's a question of a deoraisa, right? It's if we don't hold of the 600,000 and all we have are the first couple of characteristics that are mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch, what do you have, right? You would, and let's say City Avenue was completely straight from one end to the other end, you would have a Rishus HaRabim Deoraisa, right? Biblical Rishus HaRabim, and if that, and that would break up the Eruv, and we would have, and in theory, at least according to Rav Moshe, that means that all the side streets also then become a Rishus HaRabim Deoraisa until acted upon by some kind of force. So that, generally speaking, if that was the choice l'halacha, generally most people would be machmir. Why are most people end up being makel on this? So the sfar is a little complicated. Is that there are wires that are up, right? The wire is up. The wires do exist. They are there. Now we're going to say, well, asu rabim uvatli mechitzas. That if it's a rishus rabim, there's people going through it. Those wires may as well not be there because they're mevatel the mechitzas. Now wait a second. Should those wires really not? Is it really as if the wires aren't there? This idea that many people are coming, or shusarabim, they're mvatel the mechitzos, is that a dindo raisa, or is that a dindo rabban? Right? Is it a dindo raisa that they don't exist, and therefore biblically you look at it, it's a shusarabim, wires, schmires, posts, schmosts, right? It's as if they're not there. Or do we look at it and say, no, they're there. There's a din derabanan that we're not going to count it in a Rishus HaRabim Deoraisa, in a public space. But they still exist. If the posts are up, what do we call that space? That space is now a Rishus HaRabim Deoraisa. Right? It turns it into Rishus HaRabim Deoraisa that can't be blocked by a wire. That a wire is not sufficient to block off that space. So if that's the case, so now we've knocked it down to a rabbinic issue. It's no longer a biblical issue, it's now only a rabbinic issue. If that's the case, then we could rely on Rashi and Tosfos and these other kulas and say that we're going to use it. That's the svar, suggested by no less than the Mishkanos Yaakov himself. I mean, the Mishkanos Yaakov is the one who came up with this. He's the one who ossered all the Eruvs. He said probably their leniency that everybody relies on it is this svar. That's as far that he has, and that's what most people rely on in order to use Eruvin today. Yeah.
We're saying here that he doesn't see any basis for people passing through, but he says if they exist, if there's 600,000 people in Suyin Shem, he says, in other words, that would seem to be.
Okay, so what is the 600,000 that are there? So if you look at the words of the Shulchan Aruch, the words of the Shulchan Aruch was Ovrim Sham, right? That the 600,000 are passing through that space.
Right.
Right? It's not exactly what Rashi and Tosfos say. Rashi and Tosfos seem to talk about 600,000 there.
Right?
So what is that? So the Shulchan Aruch, that's the Shulchan Aruch Shita. Shulchan Aruch Shita is, well, what does that mean? It means that they're passing through. Other opinions were that the 600,000 in the streets, 600,000 that live there. So Moshe Feinstein, over his five volumes of Chuvos on Erevin, right, either shifted or clarified, etc., where he came down to is that, it's quite a trick, is that it's 600,000 people that are out in the streets at a, I think, over the course of Shabbos. That's what he held was the 600,000 number that are out in the streets over the course of Shabbos. Where did he come with 600,000? So he said, well, what's the number 600,000? So we could immediately think of, well, that's the amount of people that were in the Midbar. Hold on a second. Is that the amount of people that were in the Midbar? No. Right? How many people were in the Midbar? A couple million, right? 600,000 were the men between the ages of 20 and 60. Right? So that's a third of the population at any one time. Right? So 600,000 people is really one third of the people. So is really one third. So how many people need to be living in an area for it to be considered a Rishus HaRabim like it was in the Midbar? Approximately 2 million. What's the number 600,000? Out of 2 million people, one can estimate that probably 600,000 people will be out at any over the course of Shabbos. That's the number. 600,000 is not based on the men in the Midbar. It's based on the entire amount of people, with those are the amount of people that will head out and cause the outdoor space to become Rishus HaRabim Deoraisa. So
so the neighborhood like ours, there's no 600.
No, it's not at all. and what?
Probably not even that many living in the neighborhood.
Right. So that's why, and that's probably the secret as to why Rav Moshe permitted an Erev to be up in Queens and not to be up in Flatbush. Even though the populations are probably the same, he felt that Queens could be divided up into neighborhoods Well, someone suggested this. I saw on one of the blogs someplace that Queens is divided up into neighborhoods. Kew Garden Hills is Kew Garden Hills, to the point that Queens is the only borough in New York that when you write a letter to Queens, you don't write Queens, you don't write New York, you write Flushing, Hillcrest, Forest Hills, Kew Garden Hills, right? You actually write the neighborhood. Because there, it's somewhat clear where the dividing lines are, as opposed to Brooklyn, where it's not as clear, right? Where you write Brooklyn, New York.
Also, weren't as many people in Queens, but.
Yeah, but in terms of the numbers, I mean, in terms of the number 600,000, right? You're not gonna. It's gonna be objectively the same. By the way, in Queens and other in places, in Manhattan, in Washington Heights, they have doors on the A-roofs to fulfill this opinion. They have. They put in the. You can look. You can find them online. You could get a picture of them online. You could by all of the entrances to Central Park. You'll see on the lamppost right next to it. There is like this tube. It's like this black tube. And contained within that tube is like a tennis net or something. And in theory, you can schlep it across to the other side, and you'll in theory have a door that closes up when you want. Now, they don't do it on a regular basis. They might maybe once in a while, or when they built it, they did it or something.
They did this in Chicago when they built the A-roof. There were certain places where, in order to satisfy this condition, what they did is they took sections of chain link fence, and they're actually rolled up. So it'd be very difficult to extend them across.
Yeah.
But they're there.
Right. In Kew Garden Hill and in Forest Hills for Queens Boulevard, they're called dlussos. That's the way they're called in the business. Doors that will come in and out. Yeah?
I just don't understand. I'm sorry, I think I missed it. The point about the wires and the people. The wires aren't there or the people aren't there?
No, the people are there. You can't imagine people out of existence. You could say the wire has no halachic validity. That's the assumption that you can make. So come and say, no, it has halachic validity. It will knock it down from a d'oraisa to a d'rabbanan din. Right? It exists. It's just, practically speaking, you can't carry there unless you figure out another way to enclose the space. Yes?
I thought there was another big issue in Brooklyn of streets that are so long, even though they turn, but they go right over a bridge into Manhattan.
That would be the city foolishly earlier, yeah. It could also be that Rav Moshe held that the Rishus HaRabim extends as far as until acted upon by some type of force. So in theory, yeah, if it goes straight into Manhattan, so the Rishus HaRabim of Manhattan can go over the bridge and head into Brooklyn, unless you can put some kind of barrier up in the way. I don't know the maps well enough to know if that's true or not.
Straight.
Yeah, I don't think that they're.
And so if you have like a river or something that makes a depression that meets the first criteria, you don't need to put up the wall.
Right.
It is its natural.
Right.
Natural.
So we have on Karakung Creek, we have about 200-300 yards that have no wires there. We just use the bank of the creek as part of our wall.
So
I think that's the only place.
So if Manhattan is an island, why doesn't that work for us?
Oh, that's a good question. That is the big question. Either you say, from Moshe Feinstein's perspective, that Manhattan itself is a Rishus HaRabim, meaning the walls only work when it's going to enclose an area and make it a Rishus HaYachid. But if you're going to enclose a Rishus HaRabim, it's still going to be called a Rishus HaRabim. That's one reason. And then there's a question about how there might be areas where it's not so steep. There are Rabbanim who have taken circle line cruises around all of Manhattan to measure it out, to see whether it is or whether it isn't. The results of all these are always like kept secret. I don't know. You could search through Rabbi Mintz's, Adam Mintz's doctorate on the Manhattan A-Roof and see the various episodes of Rabbanim traveling around in a boat and checking out the Manhattan walls. There's a good picture in the A-Roof exhibit a couple of years ago. The Manhattan YU Museum had this A-Roof Museum. There's a picture there of J.J. Schachter and some of the other, and Rabbi Berman and one or two other Rabbanim, like at a like a seaport someplace, like in their gray hats and coats, like looking up at something, trying to figure out whether it connects or not. And, yeah. The two side issues, although we are reaching our end here. The two side issues I wanted to discuss is, number one, the idea of tikkun, of what the actual Eruv is. The actual Eruv, right, even if you have an enclosed space, so Shlomo HaMelech was misakin, that you have to figure out a way that the people join together. So you have to take some type of food and put it in the possession of somebody else. That is the that is what we call a Eruv Chatzeros, and that's what we do. I mean, every Eruv, the minhag is to do it every Eruv Pesach. You take a box of matzahs, we make a bracha on it, and assuming nobody eats that box of matzahs over the course of the year, so that's going to support us as our Eruv Chatzeros for at least a year, two, three, yeah. As long as matzahs actually stay edible, which as far as I could tell is forever. So the box of matzahs is in the base medrash on top of the shelf. There's a sign that says Erev Chatzeros. Anybody? No, it doesn't say do not eat. You're allowed to eat it. If you eat it, though, you have to let me know, because then we need to replace it over the course of the week. But everybody has a portion of that. A portion of that Erev Chatzeros. There was a bit of a shaila about whether it's appropriate to keep in the shul or not. It's an Erev Chatzeros should be in the shul because in theory it has to be accessible to everybody at all times. And the shul in theory is locked. However, in practice it's not. Because there's a key outside. I mean, everybody in theory has some amount of accessibility to the shul over the course of Shabbos. Probably just as much so as if it would be in any person's house. I mean, if it's in a person's house and you run into the problem of what if that person goes away for Shabbos, whatever. So that's our minute even in shul. There are some that have questioned that minhag, but that's what we do here. And finally, the last thing I wanted to just discuss, and something that many people forget about, and that is the idea of renting the space. There is a halacha that if there is a non-Jew that lives in the area, or a Jew that isn't Shomer Shabbos that lives in the area, so that is mevatel the entire area. That means it's unable to be made into an Eruv. So the Gemara has, it's a bit of a, that kind of puts a damper on things, right? So if you just learn Mishnayos, then you got a problem, because that's what the Mishnah says. So the Gemara says, well, there is a way around it if you rent the space from them. Okay, that's still not so simple. So what's described in the Gemara, what's developed, and perhaps a little bit more difficult today, is that if somebody has access to all of those places, so then you could rent it from them. So that is the idea of going to some type of government official and borrowing it from them. The only problem with that is that we have something called the Constitution, and there is something called the Quartering Act, and other such things, like the need for a warrant. In theory, the government does not have access to our private property at all times. Some have said for that reason, it's even better to do it with a police officer. Police officers perhaps have more access than government officials do. It's an issue. I don't know. It's an issue. Our minhag in America, I think, is not to use the police people, but rather to use government officials. A couple of years ago, this was done by us years ago, and usually rented for 50 years or so. You rent the space for the purpose of building an Eruv on Shabbos. That's the way it's constructed. There was an issue a couple of years ago already that Rabbi Kaplan called me on a Thursday night telling me that he was learning Hilchos Eruv, and he realized that he thinks that one of the contracts he did was done in a way that wouldn't work if the person leaves office. I mean, that's an issue. Let's say you rented to a deal with a person, and he leaves office. So does he stay in, does he not stay in, etc. So he did it in a way that doesn't. So I remember running to the township on Erev Shabbos one year and giving him like a bunch of half dollars and re-renting all of Lower Merion for the purpose of Eruvin. But that is one of the things that you just have to be aware of, and whoever the Rav HaMakshir is has to be on top of, because these things do expire, and you better make sure that that's in order. Otherwise, the whole Eruv is not in keeping with at least that din d'rabban. So they have eminent domain.
Yeah.
Now you're getting into some serious politics.
Yeah.
Eminent domain has been on the agenda the last couple of weeks, I've heard. But yeah, right. In theory, I guess they have eminent domain. That's a good hatter. All right. Next time we have the Eruv convention, I'll suggest that.
The government continues whether or not the individuals who made the agreement are in office or not, right?
Right, but right. So that, yes, the theory. That's why we you'd say that it's okay. But it has to be a reality to it. So the issue with that particular document is that he didn't put an end date on it. That the other we have about four or five different townships that we're involved with, and they all have. And in theory, if you're going to do it in this way, where the person could leave office, then it needs to have an end date. Otherwise, the Mishnah Berurah says it's not like really worth anything. It's just a joke. So if it's a situation where the person is leaving office, then you have to have an end date. This one didn't have an end date. I think, if I recall correctly, that was the issue that needed to be rectified.
So in theory, you could come into the shul on Shabbos if for some reason you didn't have a second pallet and borrow or take a piece from
If you only took one piece, I don't even care. But it's really two independent boxes. Yeah. 15 people could do that.
Yeah, it's a
one-note
age.
Right.
Be aware of that.
No. It's not. Because what I've done is, I think every Erev Pesach, let me just do an Erev Pesach. Every Erev Pesach, I come in, I bring my own box of matzahs, I put it there, and I take another one. I take the one that's there, and we use it for matzah brei. So it's within a year at all times. All right, Yashikov, thank you for coming.